I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And very excited to have joining us in the studio a couple of guys that have worked together on and off for a while, Jim White and Paul Funfaro. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
And Paul's been here before. You're just down the road in the Twin Cities. Jim, have you even played in Duluth before? Have you been in Duluth before?
I only have heard about Duluth through weather reports.
And you got lucky today. I always get a kick out of it when people from the South, are you in Athens, Georgia
Athens,
now?
Georgia.
Is that right? Are here in the winter. I think, what are you doing here? But we're so happy that you're here and that you got reasonable weather for here anyway. Jim, for people who don't know, you've been around for a while. I think my first introduction to you was the Searching for Wrong Eyed Jesus documentary.
BBC, yeah.
Which,
BBC documentary.
Yeah, and that came after your debut album, Wrong Eyed Jesus, right?
It kind of actually sprung out of that. Some English filmmakers heard my first record and contacted me and asked me if I would write a screenplay for them. And I thought it was a bad idea, but they were insistent. They came and visited me in Florida, where I was living at the time, and I took him around the town just killing time until I could get rid of him. And the more I took him around town and showed him how weird Pensacola, where I'm from, is, and how weird the South was, by the end of the week that they stayed with me, they were firmly decided that they would just make a documentary about the South and the peculiarities of the region. Peculiarities in the world are diminishing because we're becoming homogenized and groomed to be sort of, you know, very normal. So they were stunned that in the center of, like, the engine of normality in America, that there would be this little weird bastion of eccentricity and weirdness. And so they decided to make this documentary, and I was the de facto guide. I drove around the South in an old car and just interviewed people, and they went with me. And it's had quite a cult life. I still do film festivals where I'm asked to come and speak and regale people with stories about how strange the South is.
and having it come from a British perspective adds another little twist to it. So you guys are playing, and Jim, you've gone on to put out many, and you've had such an interesting life. You've been a surfer, a professional surfer, right? You drove cab in New York for 10 years. You recently won an award for a short story that you wrote.
Pushcart Prize. I was shocked.
Yeah, and so you've done a lot of stuff in your life, but you've been making music for about 15 years now, something like that? Lots of great albums?
I've been a professional musician for about 18 years, I wrote songs for all of you aspiring songwriters. I wrote songs for 25 years before anybody ever heard my first song.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sort of an avocation of self-therapy. I had a lot of psychological problems, and I addressed them through song. And when I first started, I wasn't very good at it, and they were really bad songs. Eventually, they started making a little more sense as I drew closer to my goal of being sane.
Well, we'll come back and find out how you're doing with that. But do you want to start with a song? And I want to mention you and Paul are playing a show tonight, a house show, but it's a really big house, so I think several people can fit in there, at 2104 in Duluth, which is at 2104 East Superior Street. And the show starts at 8, doors open at 7. Local musician Galen Lee is going to be opening the show, and then Paul Funfaro, who's here with us, is going to be playing, and then Jim. And you guys do some stuff together as well.
Yeah.
What do you guys want to start with this afternoon?
Well, you, when we were talking before the show started, you asked about this recent record I have out with the Packway Handle Band. It's a bluegrass record. And so we thought we'd do something off of that, but not bluegrass. We'll turn the bluegrass on its ear. This is a song we'd like to dedicate to Mr. Sleepy LaBeef, who appears in the song. It's called Jim 316. Take me down to the bright lights and sounds, where the jukebox plays songs that I know. Set me free, let me be one more face in this crowd, a lost souls who don't care where they go. On the road from San Antonio to New Orleans, there's a thousand little bars along. Half my life I lived in fear, I'd burn in hell, but now it's clear that a bar is just a church where they serve beer. Yes, a bar is just a church where they serve beer. Now, bartender, won't you it's no wonder I'm sitting right here drinking. Just how blind have I been? How safe might I be if I was to die some slow death of propriety? At the end of the day, it ain't no sin being here, 'cause the bar's just a church where they serve beer. Yes, the bar is just a church where they serve beer. Now old Sleepy LaBeef got real mad at me for singing a song he said would land me straight in hell. And I guess old Sleepy meant well, but from his tone I could tell Sleepy's heaven just wasn't no place for me. See, this bar stool's my pew, this pretzel's my communion. 'Cause when you get down to basics, we're all basically human. So lift your mugs in the air and with a cheer join my prayer. When I say a bar is just a church, a bar is just a church, a bar is just a church where they serve beer.
Jim White live from Studio A, Paul Funfar on clarinet there, and one from that album you did with the Packway Handle Band. And is that a true story about Sleepy LaBeef?
Yeah, I was when my first record came out, my first record was called The Mysterious Tale of How I Shouted Wrong Eye Jesus. And it talks a little bit, the record talks and the short story that goes with the record talks about my struggles with mental clarity, sanity, and religion, because in the South, that's a potent mix.
And you grew up in Pensacola, near Pensacola, Florida,
yeah,
right?
Very,
which is very religious.
Highest churches per capita in America, and a very conservative Christian town. And I was going crazy because I was essentially an artist in a town that didn't really like creativity. So the first record talked a lot about that stuff, and I was invited to the Calgary Folk Festival. And the Good Canadians put me on a Sunday morning gospel sing. I guess they saw Jesus in my name of my record and thought that I would be good for the Sunday morning gospel sing. And it turned into kind of a rout because the other bands were bluegrass bands from America and they were devout Christians. And it was like a round robin sing. There was five different bands on the stage. And one of the people they invited was Sleepy LaBeef, who was a legendary Hellraiser, just a rockabilly legend from smack over Arkansas. And it's about 6'6", about 400 pounds. And I thought, well, if anybody messes with me, Sleepy will get my back because, you know, he's a funny, fun-loving guy who won't let anybody get too upset about things. But I sang a song called, the first band sang their good Sunday morning Christian hymn, you know, What a Friend We Have in Jesus, or one of those good songs, four-part bluegrass harmony. It was beautiful. And then the next one sang, you know, they were these archetypal bluegrass bands. They sang another hymn that I knew from my upbringing. Then I sang a song that the chorus was, God was drunk when he made me. God was drunk when he made me. God was drunk when he made me. And that's why I'm so crazy. Jesus and the fiery furnace. Yeah, the devil and the deep blue sea. God was drunk when he made me, but that's okay, 'cause I forgive him. So I sang that to the good Canadian audience. And the Canadians should be running the world because they know how to get along. They were tolerant, and they smiled, and they laughed. And I was pretty enthused, and then I looked around the stage, and sort of the fundamentalist Christian equivalent of jihad was brewing with the bluegrass bands. So I looked at Sleepy LaBeef, this man, notorious man, for a little support, and he told me I would burn in hell forever for the song because he had just rededicated his life to the Lord after 80 years or 60 years of hell raising. And he sort of threatened me in a kind Christian way. Said that if I sang another song like that, that he was going to take me behind the tent. And he was concerned for my soul, as most Christians are. You know, they have a belief system that says that if you're not saved, you're going to burn in hell forever. The fundamentalist people that I come from. So we kind of went round and round a little bit, and he followed me around the festival trying to win me back to the Lord. And that song, God Was Drunk When You Made Me, used to be called Jim 316. But when I got home, I thought, I need a better Jim 316, obviously. And so I wrote it with Sleepy in mind. And I appreciate his concern for me. It's kind of something you run into the South a lot, is if you're not right with Jesus. Well, do you know the TV show? It's a Showtime thing. What's it called? Ray McKinnon is the director. Well, I'll think of it in a minute. It's a popular Southern show right now. And Ray worked in a factory down south before he became a famous actor. He's in A Brother, Where Art Thou? And a bunch of movies like Mud. He was in Mud. He's a great character actor from South Georgia. And he worked in a factory, and he was 18, and he was smart. And he knew all about how to refute Christian arguments. And the foreman was a Christian trying to win him to the Lord. And the foreman every day would say, well, what about this? And Ray'd say something back, you know, a little 18-year-old kid smarter than him. And finally, the foreman got mad one day and picked up a shovel and started swinging it at Ray. And Ray ran and hit on a pile of cotton bales. And he was swinging at his feet and trying to hit him. And everybody in the place, you know, the warehouse, ran and grabbed the foreman and said, you know, John, what are you doing? And he said, well, if I can't talk him into the Lord, I'm going to beat him into the Lord. And so... that's kind of what you experience a lot in the South. You experience a lot of very strenuous proselytizing. And that song, both of those songs were kind of written in as a response to that. I was trying to break free of the orbit of the Christian world, and the gravity was quite strong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more with Jim in just a minute, but we're going to hear something from Paul now. You have a new album out. In fact, you're doing a big release show down in the Twin Cities tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, Cedar tomorrow night.
And tell me about this project, because you got a grant for this, and you not only, it's not just music, there are videos involved, there's all sorts of stuff going on. Yes. I don't know how we're going to fit in all this great stuff we have to talk about today between the two of you. I just don't know. So tell me more about that project, and what inspired you, first of all? What inspired this project?
Well, the finances inspired it with a deadline. No, actually, traveling with Jim a few years ago, we met with the folks who did Searching for the Wrong Eyed Jesus, and they were working on a new documentary about Slava the Clown, who's very famous, and they kind of follow him going through Siberia.
Russian clown, yes, who Russian does clown. Very offbeat shows that are magical, truly magical. If you don't like clowns, you'll like Slava.
Yeah, I think a Russian clown is a different clown than an American clown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like it's a theater art sort of. Anyway, they follow this guy, and a lot of the footage was in Siberia, and I was doing some music for them because they asked about doing some scoring for their film. And their film is kind of stalled, and nothing's happened, but I had all these sketches that I wrote, and I sent them off to the State Arts Board. So thank you to the Minnesota State Arts Board, and they gave me a grant. And so the idea was that I would take these winterscapes about Siberia and write them about Minnesota. And then, of course, we had kind of a bunk winter with not much snow. So it became its own entity, and every song became kind of its world of its own. So I wrote eight pieces for an eight-piece chamber orchestra, and there's one
you
song.
You composed.
I composed.
You composed. You didn't write.
I'm legit. No, I'm bona fide. I got a grant behind me. So anyway, I composed with much vigor these eight pieces, and we also did films. So each piece has a film that corresponds to it, and we're going to perform the music while the films are projected at the Cedar. And then we also did a book of illustrations that goes with each piece. So it's a big endeavor.
Conceptual.
It's very conceptual. Yeah, it's high art.
And it's interesting because last time we were here, you talked a little bit about your classical background in playing clarinet and how you're an guy of Irish heritage that plays klezmer music. but you know, that was something that you had kind of left behind because, you know, that there wasn't a lot of room in that world. And so you were kind of doing more of the Painted Saint stuff. And so it sounds like that's kind of, you're composing and bringing that background into
this. Well, a lot of that's all just pragmatics. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in this world where no one wants to pay for music anymore, you end up doing a lot of solo stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what more songwriting has allowed me to still maintain music and do that. But, you know, for this project at the Cedar, I've got 8 musicians on stage at one point, and then the Brass Messengers come on board, so that's another 10 folks. So the likelihood of being able to travel and arrange that many people in one place is extremely limited. Although, you know, it's actually in Minneapolis, we're getting opportunities to do more of that piece. We do a chamber music series up there, and we perform 2 of the pieces, and in February we're going to do 4 of the movements as well, too. So it's actually falling into place. People are interested in it.
It's breakthrough.
It's my breakthrough, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this will be on. I'm on Letterman next week.
So how does that translate when you do things solo? How are you able to present?
Well, we'll find out.
All right.
I will play a song from that. I am not a pianist. I'm new to the instrument, but I wrote the entire thing on piano, and it's very elaborate. Most of it is a lot of odd time signatures, and I was very influenced by Philip Glass and Steve Reich and sort of the minimalist composers with these walls of instruments doing similar parts. So one of the pieces I'm going to play on piano, this one does have lyrics. It's the only one that does have lyrics. And so it's orchestrated for 8 players, and there's a bunch of melodies. But when I can sing it, it's more of a drony kind of rendition of it. And this one kind of works solo because the whole point is that it's sort of a drone. I was watching a movie called Manufactured Landscapes, and the opening scene is great because it's a 5-minute single shot of a camera. It must be on a dolly, but it parallels this giant Chinese factory. So it's about 5 minutes in one shot of just people monotonously working. And that scene really impacted me in this just slow, unending movement. And so this piece is about the tar sands. And I envision sort of this just slow, unending pan across a monotone landscape that was once beautiful and has been mowed down and sawed off into just black tar. And so the song...
Conceptual, right?
Conceptual, yeah. We're talking high art. None of this drinking in churches stuff. But the song is more reflecting on sort of the desolation beauty of that scene as opposed to the commentary. Because, you know, you could comment and say, well, it's pretty stupid. We're sawing off mountains to dig in the ground and ship that all over the world so we can drive our cars, you know, and our SUVs to pick up our kids, which is a ridiculous situation. And I wanted this more of a visual image as opposed to a commentary on that. So, So yeah, after all that verbiage, I'm going to play the song. So this is called Tar Sands. Scroll our satellites in the fastest stretch, the slow down of the earth. Scratch through skin permafrost. Scratch through skin permafrost.
Paul Fanfara live from Studio A, and that is something from his new album, Seven Secrets of Snow. Now, you said you play several instruments, guitar, clarinet, but you said the piano until now has not been one of your major ones. What made you want to do that, and what is that like, playing tackling a new instrument as an accomplished musician on other?
It's actually really liberating because you don't have to worry to a certain degree if it's good or not. A lot of times, you know, when you've been playing an instrument all your life, you become much more technically adept, and so it's an exponential thing. It takes so much work to get better. And when you're a novice at an instrument, the ideas just seem to flow better because everything is interesting. You know, you play the simplest chord and it's like, oh, that's amazing. So, but you know, I practiced a lot, and a lot of it is much more ornate than what I was doing, but I would practice, you know, 3-4 hours a day on piano, and I couldn't play the stuff I had written for, but luckily on the record, Andy McCormick is an amazing pianist, and Chris Hepla, who also plays in Painted Saints, is a great piano player. So I would write it out and then let them actually play it.
So how do you do that? Do you work it out on another instrument, or are you just able to hear it in your head?
It's completely scored out. I learned
I'm not a musician, so I need the basic explanation.
Yeah, this one was the first time I wrote it out like a symphonic piece. And actually, I'm doing a Kickstarter campaign also because grants are great, but they don't cover everything. And so one of the things I'm giving away is the score. So I wrote every piece out note for note. So some of them actually have 20 parts. So it's completely scored out. And I would write the basics on piano, write that out, tinker with ideas. And I could take it home and overdub. But a lot of it, the process, luckily I play with fantastic musicians who are great, but also patient, which is a good trait in your musician, compatriots. And I would experiment. I'd write this thing out, and I'd have the melodies, and we'd play it on cello or trumpet, and I'd say, well, maybe that doesn't work with that. And I studied a lot of harmony. I spent a weekend on YouTube watching counterpoint videos and explaining counterpoint. And, it's actually, at the music school, I'm sure they have an entire semester of counterpoint. So I spent a lot of time doing that and studying Bach counterpoint. So when I wrote harmonies, that it was actually a legit harmony and not just, me overdubbing something on top. So I spent a lot of time writing it out for everyone and experimenting. And so thank God for patient musicians. They're not that many of them.
When did you actually get this? So where did you actually record the project?
We went to Creation Audio with Tom Herbers. And Tom, he records Trampled by Turtles. He does a lot with Andrew Bird. He does all the low stuff, which, although I love low, they did put a few wrenches into this recording because they'd go to Europe, and Tom's like, I got to go to Europe. Actually, I scrambled. Thanks, low, by the way. They went to China, which is great for them, but then they hauled my recording engineer away for a few weeks. And so our first session was canceled for Lowe to be in China. So,
and when you're trying to organize 8 busy musicians' lives, getting them all to coincide in one place is a major challenge. When people listen to a record or see a film, they have no idea the logistical obstacles that artists, particularly independent artists like Paul and I, face when we're trying to catch lightning in a bottle with something that involves more than just a single person. He's here in 20 parts. You got to get 20 people in a room performing that to really catch the magic of a performance. I think that when people listen to music or watch a film, every once in a while, just to take a deep breath and say, I wonder who made this happen and what were the mechanics of it, it'd be a good thing to do to appreciate a little more. Even bad records, people work really, really, really hard and pour their heart and souls into them, quite frequently bankrupting themselves in the process. Mm-hmm. That's the cautionary tag on that story.
Well, so were you there with anxiety and things in your head that you were like, I just want to do this, and they're in China.
Talk to my wife. She's
She gets to hear it all.
Yeah, well, and too, you know, I was gone a lot. It was a lot of the scheduling. I would be up till 4 a.m. a lot of times because, you know, I'm with my daughter during the day, mm-hmm. and then I teach lessons at night, so I get done about 9 o'clock, and I'd be up till 4 a.m. practicing piano, writing all this crap out, trying to figure out finale, how that works.
He sleeps 4 hours a night.
I do. But I think one thing, it's actually, this has been really good for me as a person because you learn to let things go. And it's extremely frustrating when you put work in. You hope that people practice their part. You hope that they do what they're going to do. And with filmmakers, so in addition to the musicians, we had 3 filmmakers and deadlines. So, you know, there's a lot of faith. Actually, as of us leaving for Madison, 2 of the films have not yet been completed. Mm. I think they're completed, but they haven't, you know, fully rendered them and put them online and all that kind of stuff. But... And I have faith. I have good faith that they will be done for Saturday. But
it's an ambitious project, certainly.
Yeah. It sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful. Yeah.
But it is. I mean, it's a learning experience to just hope and assume that people will, you know, you turn your baby over to them and just like, okay, you will do what you're supposed to. And that's it's extremely stressful to let go. You know, I suppose it's like sending your kids off to college or something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's hear another one. And, you know, this is great, so we're just going to run a little bit late into the next program here, but I need to tell people that this is KUMD, Duluth Public Radio. Get the legal ID in there. What do you want to play for us next, Paul?
I think I'm going to whistle, if that's okay.
Can we take a vote? Whistling, okay. I'm okay with it.
Okay.
We'll allow it.
It's a lot better when he whistles than when I whistle.
So I'm gonna. Well, first I'm going to move a chord. I'm going to describe things for the radio audience.
Yes, please do, because now we're switching from keyboard to guitar.
Yeah.
To not just any guitar, a Gretsch, what's that thing called? A gentleman?
Country gentleman.
Country gentleman.
1977 country gentleman.
It's a real nice guitar.
Or I could tell a joke about Moose.
No,
Montana.
No.
I could, if I feel strong, I'll yodel too.
Speak musically, Paul.
Prowling, the coyotes are howling. Way out where the doggies bawl. Where spurs are a jingling, the cowboy is singing his lonesome cattle call. Stays in the saddle till his day's work is done, and he rounds up the cattle each fall. Singing his cattle call. Ooh, 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 ooh. hours he would ride on the range far and wide, till the cold winds blow up a squall. His heart is a feather in all kind of weather, he's singing his cattle call. Singing his cattle call. He's brown as a berry from riding the prairie, and he speaks in an old western drawl.
Paul Fanfara live from Studio A, and pretty sure that one's not on the latest album. But
that is not. That was actually a guilty pleasure. I just realized too, there's certain sounds that stick in your head, and I love whistling. I love reverb, just thick drenched reverb. And I love those old spaghetti westerns like Morricone. That sound, and I realized I saw My Own Private Idaho when I was 16 or something. And I guess I liked the movie. I don't remember the movie, but I remember the opening credits. There's just this beautiful sign. You know, he looks at this this long road, and he said, "I see an effed up face." And they play the cattle call with Eddie Arnold yodeling it. And I realized that sound was stuck in my head, and that's where a lot of stuff I write is just that sound. I searched for the song and found it and just decided I wanted to do it.
And isn't one of the bands that you've been in along the way, I forget the name of them, but didn't they
the Spaghetti Western String Company?
Yes.
Yeah, and then we didn't play any Spaghetti Western. It was like bluegrassy chamber music, but we had nothing to do. Actually,
but use the name anyway.
Well, there's Mike Rizzetto, who started the band, and it was actually a solo project before he found more musicians, and he did a solo record. And he's Italian. You know, his parents are Sicilian. He looks very Italian. He's very Italian. And he'd always wear this cowboy hat. So everyone called him Spaghetti Western because he's an Italian dude with a hat. So that's where the name comes from, not necessarily the genre. Uh-huh.
And a phenomenal band. I've heard Paul's projects over the years, and when he sent me that, I felt like, wow, this is the breakthrough thing, because it was really, really, really phenomenal music. And it was a short-lived collaboration. People went their separate ways, as happens. But if you get a chance to listen to the Spaghetti Western String Company.
Four records. It was a great band. And then our singer / mandolin player, he decided he wanted to become a priest. And
as so often happens in this industry.
Geez, that's what ruins great rock bands. You know? Didn't that happen to AC/DC? He went to become a priest, and he did that for a year, and he ended up marrying a nun. She was in the convent for, I think, 2 years. And now he's teaching Gregorian chant in... Lincoln, Nebraska, married to a nun.
Wow.
So, there's a punchline there, but that's
somewhere.
True.
Yeah. No pets were harmed in the making of that marriage.
Well, Jim, we have time for one more from you, and just want to chat with you a little bit more. So mm-hmm. you, your last solo album was, 2012, I think, Where It Hits You, right?
Yeah.
And you've since done the project with... The band that you...
Bluegrass project,
right,
something
Bluegrass,
I always wanted to do.
Yeah, but completely different than what people had come to expect from you, I think. And you've been producing people as well. In fact, you said that project started because you were going to produce that band, and you ended up in the band for that album.
Yeah, I'm producing other people. I felt to some extent like I've had my say in terms of what I wanted to get off my... the burdens that I wanted to get off my back. And so... At a certain point, like I'm almost 60, I just decided it was time for me to help other people. So I work with entry-level artists that show promise. I did a record with a band called the Skipperdees, which is a phenomenal record if you get a chance to hear it. Two twin sisters from rural Tennessee who just killed it on their first record and then promptly broke up. Twin sisters broke up. And then I produced a record for a couple European bands, and it's really gratifying to see that all this stuff that I've been doing sort of as self-therapy has a value beyond me. I can now help other people find their voices. So that's kind of, the bluegrass thing came. They said that they wanted me to produce their record, And I write like a closet bluegrass guy. I always wrote bluegrass songs and never had a chance to put them on my records because my records are weird, crazy quilts, but I feared bluegrass would run people off. So getting sort of the green light from the universe to make a bluegrass record, I said, well, how about if we just make a record together? And that's what we did. Very quick, very easy, and astonishing results. Mojo just put out their top 10 Americana records of the year.
And that's a really well-known British Mojo music magazine.
Music magazine, and we were in the top 10. And we charted with a song on the Americana charts, things that have normally escaped me. I'm a fringe artist like Paul. We're an odd couple musically, but we both enjoy our position, not in the mainstream so much.
And how did you guys get together? Is there a brief version of that that you guys can tell? Was that from your days in Colorado? Paul? Or
Devotchka used to open for me, and Paul was one of the linchmens of Devotchka. And so I'd watch this amazing band playing opening for me and feel a little bit embarrassed that such a great band was opening for me and me not opening for them. Devotchka is a pretty powerful presence even back in those days. And so Paul and I talked many times after the bands would play and the night would end. I'd just sit and talk to him about all of his skills because he plays guitar, he plays clarinet, he plays bass clarinet, he plays cello. He's a multi-instrumentalist people like him are hard to find. He sings. And I just, kind of put the bug in his ear that if you ever wanted to do some touring with me, please.
I wrote you a letter, too.
Please let me know. You wrote me a letter?
I did, yeah, because I quit Devotchka, and I was like, well, what am I going to do now? And I thought I'd take a break from music for a while, and I ended up writing to three people that I liked. So I wrote Calexico a letter because I liked their music, and I called Eugene Edwards from 16 Horsepower, and I just called him one day, and I was like, I really like your music. I'd like to play with you sometime. And he kind of awkwardly said, oh, okay, hung up. And then a month later he called. He says, can you play cello and do you have a passport? And I said, I have one of those things and I will learn the other. So I learned the cello and went to Europe with 16 horsepower. And then I wrote you a letter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Back when people used to write letters.
Yeah.
And we've collaborated off and on. He's toured with me. We've worked on records together. We've done all kinds of things together over the years, and we keep track of each other. We lost track for a while. I had a kid, he had a kid, and we named both of them Sadie. Interesting. It's just kind of like, somehow we're connected. We did a tour of the UK a couple years ago, long string of sold-out shows, and it was a surprise. We'd never rehearsed. We just started playing songs, and, boy, people really responded.
Great. Well, what do you want to finish up with here, Jim?
We're going to finish with a short instrumental I got my hand caught in a bandsaw when I was in the 20s, and I played guitar a lot, and my fingers were mangled badly. And I only had two fingers that really worked for a number of years. And I wrote these what I called two-finger etudes on guitar. I'd heard Julian Bream, who is a classical guitarist, play once on a TV show, like the Ed Sullivan Show or something, and thought, I can do that. So I wrote these two-fingered etudes, and I have about 10 or 15 of them, and I'm working on a record with them right now. That may be the next thing that comes from me as a classical guitar record, which is, if you track my career, anything can happen. I don't feel comfortable doing the same thing over and over again. Anyway, there's no title for this.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much, guys. That is Jim White and Paul Fanfara live from Studio A. They're doing a show tonight in Duluth. It's the doors open at 7. It's at 2104 East Superior Street. It's a house show. And Galen Lee's opening at 8. And then you guys are going to be... How is this going to work? You're going to do some collaboration as you have here today, right?
Yeah, I'll probably play a couple songs, and then Jim will take over and make us laugh, cry.
Yes, I've never seen one of your shows, Jim, but I know, you know, you tell some great stories, and it's all not just...
It's not a traditional show.
Oh, well, okay.
It's tap dancing that really...
No whistling, but tap dancing.
Paul will do some whistling. He whistled on a couple of my songs last night.
Yeah.
Great.
Improvisational whistling is certainly one of the new vanguards of music.
I think there's a market for it. Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us in.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Mike Nowitzki. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.